Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today, June 6th, 2013. We officially are out of our fourth annual Franchise Legal Series, and it certainly was a very successful series at that. And then we're leading into, as I said, in June, we're in the Franchise Model Series. And today we'll be talking about consumer marketing. We'll get into that in just a bit. I do want to thank everybody that really dedicated a lot of their time to make the fourth annual legal series just a tremendous success. We started out on April 11th with Michael Leithold from Play Cook, and we talked about franchise sales best practices. We followed up with another person from other attorney and partner from Play Cook, and it was Lee Play. And we talked about data and the importance of securing data, protecting it, and the responsibilities franchisors have in protecting that data and how they utilize that data. And, of course, we also talked about, you know, potential consequences. On April 25th, we shifted gears a little bit, and Amy Chang from Chang Cohen was on, and we talked about private equity in franchising. It was really an interesting topic of discussion. The following week, Barry Heller joined me on May 2nd, and he's from DLA Piper, and we spoke about franchisor litigation issues. The following week, from Gray Plant Moody, returning to Franchise Today, was Mark Kirsch, and we talked about franchise broker relationships and outsourcing the franchise sales process from a legal standpoint. And then on May 16th, Lane Fisher from Visser Sucker was again my guest, the fourth year in a row that he's been on the legal series, and we talked about financial performance representations, or as we lovingly know them as FBRs in item 19. And then on May 23rd, we took a little bit of a change in direction, and we had Jonathan Redgrave from Redgrave LLP, an information law firm, back on the show talking about e-discovery and the responsibilities and obligations that individuals and companies have with respect to digital information and being able to provide it through requests for interrogatories and production of documents and depositions and what have you. And then we wrapped up the fourth annual legal series with Dean Heil from the IFA, who gave just a tremendous legal symposium recap last week. Just if anybody that wasn't at the IFA legal symposium in Washington earlier this in May, you really need to listen to Dean Ha last week. It was just very, very eloquent, very comprehensive in what went on, and it was amazing we were able to discuss so much in such a short period of time. So already looking ahead at the fifth annual series next year, hard to believe that we've already done this 4 years in a row. And again, I'd just like to thank everybody that participated again and gave so much of their time, because as we prepare for the legal series, there are, you know, several hours worth of work that go into it, and obviously all the gentlemen that were on the show, their time is very valuable. So, again, I think it's a testament to their willingness to continue to give to franchising. So I really appreciate it. Definitely a round of applause for all of them. And, of course, as all segments on Franchise Today are available on demand, and you can just see all the shows. I think there's some 200 shows on demand right now. You can go back to blogtalkradio.com/franchisetodayshow, and you just go down the list and listen to whatever you want downloaded or listen on demand. As I said, we are starting a new series today, and today we're talking about consumer marketing. Next week will be franchise operations support and franchisee relations. The following week will be a segment on franchise sales and development, and then we'll wrap up the technology series with, the franchise model series with technology and franchising. So I think it's really going to be a very interesting series. And then as we look ahead to summer, we have our franchisor spotlight series really shaping up very, very nicely. And I think as we announce it in the next couple of weeks, all the guests, I think everybody's going to be very pleasantly surprised. And it's, as I said before, it's not going to be of a promotional variety. It's going to be entirely about best practices and how some of these emerging and successful brands and utilize certain best practices to get where they are today. And then in September, we'll be focused on the IFA's Public Affairs Conference. We'll be talking about franchising giving back to the community. We'll be talking about public affairs, governmental affairs, the Political Action Committee, et cetera, et cetera. October and November, we'll really kick it into high gear with respect to franchise sales development leadership, and that'll start in and around the franchise update meeting groups leadership and development conference in October, followed by MFE Expo's West Coast Franchise Expo. And then, of course, before you know it, we're into December. We'll do some recaps of the year in review, if you would. Maybe a couple of special events. We have a couple of special events already planned, such as the one around Dealmakers Summit. We hope to have Susan Blackbeth back on the show this year. So really an exciting time at Franchise Today. And, again, you know, couldn't do it without certain people and organizations. My hat's always off to Brad and Sherry Fishman and the team at Fishman Public Relations, Gary Bilchis, Sarah Schulte, and the entire team. Do a great job as our strategic partner here on Franchise Today. Elements Local, Jeremy LeDuc, Michael Boyer, and their team help us with a lot of back-end work and technology. And then, of course, our newest strategic partner, Franchise Update Media Group, really value what they bring to the table. And last week we had Steve Olson, the president of the Franchise Update Media Group, on the air with us for the first couple minutes talking about the upcoming Franchise Consumer Marketing Conference. And I think it's really important to mention that conference again, and we'll be talking today with my guest, Ed Waller, about the conference as he was the chair of last year's event, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. But beyond that, we also have the IFE coming up mid-September. There's a couple of franchise development conferences going on of varying varieties. A lot going on in franchising, and it's really good to see because there's a lot of optimism as we move forward, as we put the economic downturn, hopefully, in our rearview mirror. You know, as I often do in the digital space, I read hundreds of blogs and articles every single week. There's a fantastic one on the financial performance representations on the Franchise Performance Group site. And, of course, that's the site of Joe Matthews and Thomas Scott. I understand Lane Fisher contributed to the article. Just a fantastic article for franchisors to really get an understanding of what it is necessary in order to really have a effective item 19. And I love the title where it says, you know, why your item 19 sucks, how to craft a franchise earnings claim that's accurate, precise, and most importantly tells an engaging story. So anyway, that's definitely a tip of the week. Take a look at that, and I think you'll be very, very pleasantly surprised. So we got the Franchise Consumer Marketing Conference coming up at the Ritz-Carlton in Buckhead at the end of this month, specifically June 25th and 26th. One of the reasons why, too, today we were starting off our franchise model series with you know, with the consumer marketing, and Ed Waller is the, as I said, the former chair of the Franchise Consumer Marketing Conference. He's also the VP CRM at CertaPro Painters, oversees on marketing and centralized customer service department, which allows him to focus on making and replicating a positive customer experience at all levels of the organization. He was part of, as they said, the original equipment at CertaPro.com and has seen growth from 1 to 300+ franchises. He's been involved with all elements of the organization, including the marketing and franchisees, but his main interest and core skill set keeps him focused on consumer marketing. Ed, welcome to Franchise Today.
Hi, Paul. Thank you for the warm introduction. My mother must have written that.
You know, it's funny. Our moms always seem to come front and center when it comes to radio because when we started Franchise Today 4 years ago, I had one listener, and everybody says, it had to have been your mom. And I said, well, when we throw technology into the mix, I can assure you it wasn't. But certainly I hear you loud and clear on that. And I do want to thank you for being our guest today. I know you're quite busy, and I know you just basically walked off a plane not too long ago today, so I really appreciate you being with us today.
Yep, it was a challenging morning getting the airport in Boston was fine, but here in Buffalo it was pouring rain, and we had a missed approach. Everything that could get in my way to get here on time got in my way, but still made it on time.
Well, as we've often joked on this show, we have had some interesting experiences. I would love to do a pushpin map and realize all the different places that people have called in to the Franchise Today show. Last year we had John Tiffert from Plague Cook was on, scheduled to be on about 10 minutes before the show. It was a bomb threat in their building. So he was already nervous to begin with and running with his cell phone. He said, I got to get to my car. I'd be on, I promise you, but my battery's running dead. And as he ran outside, he realized that his car was in the cordoned-off area that he couldn't get to. And he was panicking and found his secretary, his admin, and she drove up to our house. And he was able to get on and on a landline. And what was amazing about it is it went off without a hitch. Nobody knew any different. And again, I appreciate you going through all the trouble of being with us today. I think it's going to be a great show. You know, as I said, you were the chairperson last year of Franchise Update Media Group's Franchise Consumer Marketing Conference, and I think there's nobody better to tell us, you know, why we should be attending this year's conference and what can be expected from the conference for the people that do attend.
I attend a lot of conferences every year. Certainly IFA, CFA. There's a few others specific to sort of some of the industry things I do. And the most interesting thing about this conference is it is nothing but marketing executives in franchising. It mm-hmm. is, there just isn't a bigger collection of people in one place all focused on one thing. Same deal with the vendors. They're strictly marketing focused. They are generally best-in-class vendors, and all the cutting-edge stuff you want to consider in the world of marketing. And now, you know, this current day and age, everything's cutting-edge, and things are changing by the minute. You get a chance to see everything up to date as it exists and as it's being developed. So if you're in marketing, consumer marketing, and you're in franchising, there just isn't any other place better to be than this conference.
So with that in mind, is it also appropriate and relevant for, you know, C-level executives that are not in the marketing space to also attend?
Only if they like marketing, because that's all we talk about. I mean, I could, you know, I would look at our, I just look internally at our chief operations and our chief executive officer. Some of that stuff would certainly be interesting to them, but they'd get pretty bored, and mm-hmm. it's fairly interactive. Some of the events that I partake in there or lead, such as the boot camp, are very user involved. You have to engage and participate and actually produce, output or think while you're there. So it is a very hands-on marketing conference. So if you're not in marketing, it might not be your bag. But if you're in marketing, there's nothing better.
Well, I know certainly as the Franchise Update Media Group always does, they always seem to bring in some very vibrant speakers. And one that I'm completely passionate about listening because I've read his books and I've seen a lot of videos is Eric Qualman, who wrote the book Socialnomics and is also the mindset behind the social media revolution videos that have gone viral and then some on YouTube. And I'm really anxious to see him because I think personally he's one of the foremost thought leaders on digital marketing in today's world.
Yes, and you'll get to hear him, see him, meet him. They hang around, and you won't get that closer to people like that outside of coming to an event like this.
Yeah,
same with
absolutely.
David Zen in the morning. So it's... it's a small group. It's only a couple hundred people, and it's in a great hotel. So if it's a great couple of days. I mean, I bring a couple of staff members with me. I was excited the first year they did this. I might have been the first person that signed up to attend. And when they asked me to chair last year, I was all about that because I saw a huge opportunity to interact with my peers. I can't do that anywhere else. I can't go to school for what we learned there. You can't get it out of a book. And it's just too hard to find that many people say at the IFA in one session and get to talk to them at the same time.
Sure, absolutely. And that's June 25th and 26th at the Ritz-Carlton, which is a phenomenal hotel, even by Ritz-Carlton standards. It's right there in Buckhead. Great venue, great place to be. I remember, too, Ed, I was at the first Franchise Consumer Marketing Conference back in San Francisco a couple of years ago, and it was just a great event. And I missed last year's because of a conflict of schedule, but I will be attending this year in Franchise Foundry. Our company is one of the bronze sponsors, and we're proud to be involved in it. And again, I want to tell people, and I told them this last week as well, even if you attended FranCamp, IFA's Digital Marketing and Technology Conference that was last month in May, I can assure you that it will not be redundant to attend this event. This is in a different direction. This is specifically about marketing, and as Ed said, you know, it's very practical, it's very hands-on, it's very interactive. That look at FranCamp is more the technology side. I really believe that there's a distinct separation. So don't think for a moment if you attended one, you don't have to attend the other. I don't think anything could be further from the truth.
Yep, this is quite different. I don't think you'll see a lot of tech people. There's a lot of technology discussed and a lot of tech vendors, but the people here aren't the technology people or the people executing it. These are the people that drive strategy, purchasing decisions, creative decisions. That's far more the group of people at this conference. Those are the people that, and that's the nature of the subject matter.
Right, absolutely. Well, I do have a tip.
Can I share one tip for the Ritz-Carlton? I didn't realize this until I was there last October for the leadership conference. I think the FUMG people put on as well, and I had to get to the airport for a 7 o'clock flight, and I was at the Ritz-Carlton about 4:30 in the afternoon, and one of the vendors, I forget who it was in the trade show, he said, you go to the airport. He said, you don't want to get a cab. Take the subway. The station's
right there.
It's $3 to get to the airport. And I said, that can't be true. He said, you'll never get there in a taxi in 2 hours, but you'll be there in half an hour on the train. And
isn't it amazing? When I flew in, I was at that event as well. And when I got off the plane, I happened to be on the same flight as Bob Gapper of Management 2000. He said, you know, why don't we go to the subway to the MARTA together? And I had never done it before, and I said, sure, you know, lead the way. And, yeah, you're right, a couple of $3. And we were there, and, I mean, and it's right there. I mean, it was two blocks from the Intercontinental, but it's right there by the Ritz-Carlton. You know, just a fantastic system. And you're right, you could never get there during a rush hour to the airport. And I think the airport is $40 or $50 anyway.
Would have to be. For $3, you can get inside the terminal at the airport to almost inside the lobby at the Ritz. That makes it a fantastic location. So if anybody's going, you haven't got to rent, you haven't got to get a taxi. It's great. It was one of the cool things about Atlanta.
Absolutely. It is one of the cool things about Atlanta. It's probably the only thing cool, because I'm sure it's going to be very hot when we're in hot Atlanta, that's for sure.
Yep.
Well, Ed, I look forward to seeing you at the event. It's hard to believe that as many times and as many events there are, and we're both at them, we've never had the opportunity of actually sitting down face-to-face, and hopefully we'll be able to do that at Franchise Consumer Marketing Conference. Matter of fact, we got to count on it. So we'll do that. Well, you know, as I said, you know, today starts our franchise model series, and after spending so much time and effort the last 8 weeks on the legal aspects, I felt we really had to bring some of the other sections of the franchise model, some of the other key components of the franchise model, back into the equation. And, of course, you know, consumer marketing is obviously a cornerstone, as well as franchise support and franchisee relations. And Mary Thompson from the Dwyer Group is going to be my guest next week. I know we had some travel problems there as well, and we're trying to work through that. So right now I'm looking forward to having Mary on the following week. Robert Stidham from Franchise Dynamics will be on, and we'll talk about franchise sales and development. And then we'll wrap up the month with Amma Pimecha from Frank Connect, and we talk about technology and franchising. So you're the leadoff hitter today, and we're talking about consumer marketing. You have obviously a wealth of experience, and even though I gave you a warm welcome and kind of briefly touched the subject of what you do over at CertaPro, if you would, give us an idea of what you do day in and day out with respect to consumer marketing at CertaPro so we have an idea of where you're coming from as we get into the meat of today's conversation.
Each day is almost a steady stream of information coming in from one channel or another, and decisions being made with different key staff members to alter the course of programs or forward, launch new campaigns or new programs, new initiatives. We're always watching what's happening today, looking if we have to make mid-course corrections, and planning on next year. We're a very seasonal business. In our case, we're actually quite a seasonal business, although I suppose every business at some level is fairly seasonal. And we're just sort of right now beginning to look at the initial planning stages for 2014 in terms of creative and some program execution, and trying to make sense of whether or not this year's program is working and how to tune it. That's pretty much what I do all day, and looking at a lot of data, analyzing a lot of information.
A lot of data, and one of the things that we said here a couple weeks ago, doing a webinar with Jeremy LaDuke at Elements Local, and we said, if content is king, certainly data has got to be the queen, without a doubt. And as they said, as the mother said in My Big Fat Greek Wedding, she said, the male is the head of the household, but the woman is the neck, and it tells the head where to go. And I think, data and content have a lot of that similar type of relationship, because as strong as we are talking about, content marketing and content management, it is driven by data. So it's no surprise to me to hear that you're looking at data day in and day out, a very important part of it. Especially in today's digital age. And you've been in franchising quite a bit. What year did you start in franchising at?
Technically, 86.
Wow. So I would say you've seen a few changes.
Yeah, quite a bit. from the 80s to the 90s to the 2000s to what, you almost got to call the post-recession times.
Right.
And, to add to the whole data content thing, you start with content, but content generates data, and you got to look at the data to inform the next round of content. And
right.
It used to change on an annual basis. Now it changes sometimes on a daily basis. And it's funny, I am quick to continue to share with my team on an irregular basis that through most of the 90s, we used the same direct mail letter. It just didn't matter really what was in it.
Mm-hmm.
The content didn't change much, and now we're putting up, hundreds of pages a day of all kinds of content, very regional, very focused, and getting it out into a bunch of different channels. So, yeah, times have changed.
Times have changed. I know I talk a lot about various aspects of marketing, integrated marketing in particular, and social media's involvement, and, of course, digital marketing as a whole. And it's interesting you said, at one time way back when it was the same direct mail marketing piece. And I like to refer to that as the difference between what the old way of doing things, which was a tic-tac-toe board, four lines, nine spaces, win, lose, or draw, and you move on to something else, or repeat as necessary, like it says on a shampoo bottle. And in today's day and age, I look at it, or I kind of relate it more to being akin to a Rubik's Cube, which is the tic-tac-toe board blown up on steroids, turbo, if you would, that creates a cross-platform, multi-tiered effect that often can touch the end user, the target user, 6, 7, 9, 10 times, often simultaneously, depending on how much of a reach you have and how much integration you have with other marketing components. And I think, as you said, the information coming in order to push the content back out and going back to, content is king and data is queen, then certainly distribution has to be the ace in what would be the formation of a winning hand in marketing. and distribution really is key. But of course, you know, knowing the target audience is really important. So how do you determine, you know, your target audience, or how would you recommend the franchisors determine their target audience and of course, what they think of the brand and the programs and the services that they might want and need?
Well, target audience, I mean, once you're up and running, we, you know, any good business plan, I suppose, you identify a market need based on some criteria. And once you got your shingle out and you've got customers, I think it's pretty much standard procedure to, you got to continually look at the people coming in the door, analyze where they're coming from, what they're coming for, and that's how you identify your target audience and look for more people of that nature, caliber. If you're targeting all people with gray hair and people with black hair start showing up, you may want to consider what you're either offering to the gray-haired people, or you got two markets, or you can expand. So, you know, in particular, we are always analyzing and looking at the people coming through the door, where more of them are. And as in any good program, and it is part of a good brand program and any brand strategy, is to find out what your customers like and don't like. It's that whole, either it's the exit interview process or the customer satisfaction survey or the net promoter score. That tells you what they like and what they think of your brand. That's the only way to do it. And it's becoming easier, more commonplace, and everybody's doing it. Getting involved with customers, not letting them off the hook when they're done with experiencing your brand. You want to find out what they feel about it. And that's how you identify the target audience.
You know, I think in today's digital world, it really can get complicated too. And I liked what you said as far as, you know, the people with black hair, and you're trying to attract the people with gray hair, and you might have two target audiences. And I think that's more and more the case as we get out into the digital space, as we identify not only the targets, but where they communicate and congregate online, as opposed to just, you know, talking into a black hole. And I think definitely sub-strategies are prudent, because even if you look at the target audience, I know we do a lot of work in the children's space, and we're dealing with you know, a lot of mommy bloggers and a lot of moms and parents, and they all seem to have a little bit of a different strategy, because you're coming at them from a different direction, and whether they are to be a buyer or an influencer, and I think that all plays certainly plays into it. And, of course, a lot of that has to do with the strategic messaging as we prepared for today's show, and I looked at some of the notes. So what do you say to customers to actually keep them coming back while enticing new customers to try your brand? Because the old adage is, you know, it's expensive to generate a new customer, so why not get the existing ones to keep coming back?
Well, first thing you tell them is thank you. And you know, you can't say that enough, but you can also wear them out. So we're fairly careful on how often we reach out to them afterwards. For the existing people, we try to, you know, you're always considering in your brand program, whether it's radio or TV, the stuff that you can't isolate your existing customers from. Of course, you have to consider in your messaging that you need to remain credible to them in what you say and do. You can't make new erroneous claims about your business to attract new ones and bring discord to your current raving fan base. But at the same time, you do need to take an effort to isolate your core customer base and continue to provide them with, and certainly in our case, materials and information that continue to allow them to make informed decisions, and certainly in our case, to make more decisions to do more painting or more decorating. And that could be as simple as, you know, recognizing what your customers want to eat, what the more common recipes are, and making sure those specials are up on a regular basis. Because, you know, we know in the food business, people come back for the same food every time of the week, whether it's fish on Fridays or a certain soup on Tuesdays. That's how you speak to your base. Make sure you got the stuff they want to have and keep it available.
Very interesting. We are on Franchise Today, a segment on consumer marketing as part of our new franchise model series. And we refer to consumer marketing as a cornerstone of the franchise model. And my guest today is Ed Waller, VP CRM at Officer to Pro Painters and the former chair of the 2012 Franchise Consumer Marketing Conference, which is put on by the Franchise Update Media Group. Ed, you know, we're in a very technologically advanced world, and certainly consumers, as well as franchise candidates alike, are certainly more sophisticated, they're more educated, they're definitely more technologically advanced than ever before. But they're also more cautious, more diligent, and more anxious that they're receiving, you know, absolute value for their dollar. Unlike a lot of other recessions where people made a lot of money and kind of pissed away some of the amount, the capital gains, if you would, over the principal. And today it's almost like, you know, hey, failure's not an option. It's almost like I make a decision to buy something, and I got to live with it. I know, having been fortunate to build a house back in the 90s, and I remember a lot of people in the neighborhood that I actually remodeled 3 years later the kitchen because it wasn't quite what they wanted. In today's day and age, I don't think we're going to see that as much. They're going to spend the money, they're going to spend it once, and they're going to live with it for a while. So certainly they are definitely more diligent and cautious than ever before. But I do think they still are going to spend money, but of course that's based upon value and reputation and credibility in the marketplace. So there's, you know, the old school marketing, like us old folks want to talk about, and the traditional marketing, and of course there's the new wave marketing, the digital marketing, where technology has played such a big piece. Does it mean we throw out the old school marketing at the expense of the new school marketing, or should I say the old school should be at the expense of the new school marketing, or can they work together? Can they be integrated together and play nice together?
Well, it's funny. When you read the statistics or you look at the analysis of who still watches TV or who still listens to radio, it's, you know, the what's old is still current and modern. Every major brand in the United States still advertises their brand on TV. That's still how you reach the masses of people. What has changed, what technology has done, aside from all kinds of other crazy ways for us to be more productive and to engage in more data, is it's made the world, when you're thinking of, you know, in terms of marketing and reaching consumers, it's become what's called a four-screen world. Now when you're planning a campaign or you're planning how you're going to interact with customers, it's not so much old or new, it's just a reality. You got to deal with four screens. You got a TV screen, you got a computer screen, you got a tablet screen, and you have a smartphone screen. And when you observe consumers today, they are using those four screens interchangeably for the same thing at different times, and they're using them at different times concurrently and consecutively. So they'll go from the TV to the iPad into the car to get the groceries and still be watching the TV show. They'll be watching TV, checking out the show and what's happening on the show in the background on their tablet while they're texting their friends what they're doing. And so when you're putting together a marketing program or how to reach consumers, you have to consider all four screens and how they interact, because that's how you need to hit people. That's how you leverage this new world, is you have to plan on being in those four places at the same time.
Yeah, I remember during the Winter Olympics when it was in Vancouver and Twitter was just gaining in popularity. And during the opening ceremonies, I was online and looking at the Twitter feed. And what a unique experience I was going through, actually watching the athletes walk into, you know, the beautiful ceremony and the beautiful stadium. But listening, if you would, you know, quotes around listening to what they were saying on Twitter as they were interacting with each other and sharing their personal experience. So it really made the experience so three-dimensional. It was just fabulous, and an event that I won't forget, where others, you know, kind of all kind of mixed together and there's nothing that really stands out from one or the other. This really stood out in my mind as being unique.
Yeah, so you have people watching TV, seeing the Twitter feed, seeing how people are reacting to what's on the screen, like you said, three-dimensional. They're engaging by acting on Twitter. They're engaging other people potentially not watching TV to engage. And now you've got more people watching the event, more people learning about it. And what does that do? Drives up the cost for advertisers because they're bringing in more eyeballs. You know, it's so cable TV isn't lost on that. I don't know if you're a big cable TV fan, but you start watching some of the new shows on Discovery and A&E, AMC, they'll have a new, a new episode on 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
And the episode before that, the following week, is the same episode only with a Twitter feed attached to it.
Right.
So people re-engage and watch the same episode. They'll watch the same show twice, but this time they're engaging their friends and bringing in a bigger audience.
And what I found neat, too, is a lot of those, you know, cable shows will actually continue, like the reality shows. And then they'll continue the discussion after the show ends online. And it's amazing.
That's right.
When they jump off air, get online, and in essence continue the show. And they've got, you know, somewhat of a captive audience that they've used now to take off TV and go online, where obviously their costs are probably a lot less than it is on TV itself. So it is interesting. And, you know,
That media buy looks like to try and stay relevant to those consumers.
It's difficult. And, of course, there's advertising online, too, as well. And so, you know, just this week on The Voice, one of the popular TV shows, there's a young girl from Texas that made it through to whatever the round is, and I don't watch the show often, but there's a country star, Blake Shelton, that's on there, and she's on his team. Anyway, there was a writer here in Houston, I believe a blogger for the Chronicle, that wrote something negative about her still being on the show. It really is unique to see, and really refreshing to see, that here's a star like Blake Shelton pops up on Twitter and actually starts chastising this blogger in the Twitter world. You get people all pumped up about it. Think about what it does to drive ratings even more outside the box. And it truly is a three-dimensional world. And I think it epitomizes the difference between that tic-tac-toe analogy to the Rubik's Cube.
Well, and we will get back to that tic-tac-toe world. We're going to plateau at some point in how many things the human can access and how many places they'll be at one time and how often they'll interact with something. It's just in a state of flux as the world sorts that out. And I can tell you, just looking at our own stats, internet as a channel, as a communication channel, does have a limit. There's not an unlimited amount of business there for us. It's useful as a channel. There's still only so much traffic. There's still only so many people going to interact with you that way. And we see the plateaus in different places, and it's going to come in social media. It's going to come in this four-screen world. But for now, that's what we have to plan on, and that's the game we have to play. Technology just makes it easy.
Yeah. I think where the changes are going to occur, you know, obviously, and it's happening already, there's certain people that prefer one platform or one medium over the other. And, you know, you can't just turn your back on one because – It's diminishing, whatever. I know even in just networking circles, there are some people, some franchise attorneys that I only communicate with, of all places, on Facebook. And if I didn't have a communications channel through Facebook, I wouldn't be in touch with them. And there are others that it's LinkedIn. There's others that it's more personal. There's others that it's email. And I've got one that the only communication I have with is through text messaging. So it's really unique, and it comes down a lot to preference. And of course, we haven't even started to discuss, you know, Google Glass and what that could bring to the world. And it's funny you mentioned four screens, because as I think beyond that, and I think beyond, you know, TV and the TV screen, the phone screen, the tablet screen, the computer screen, somebody's going to come up with something that is going to be able to advertise in sunscreen, right?
Yep. Hologram on the middle of the highway.
Yeah. Right, but
no more billboards.
I mean, yeah, it could be it could come that way because you'll be able to see three-dimensionally on your windshield, and as you're picking up, you know, as you're passing by places, you're going to see ads up on your windshield. I think right now we're only limited by the creativity and the imagination of some of these developers out there because it's phenomenal what they're coming up with.
Yeah, have you seen the Google Glasses?
Yeah, I have. I haven't put a pair on. I don't think I want to because I don't think I will take them off. But it's really interesting. It's really interesting that technology is basically mainstream. But, you know, as much as we talk about technology and we talk about the complications and the complicated aspect that technology brings into the equation, I look at an organization, a very successful franchise brand like Serta Pro Painters, and of course there's technology that's been brought into the equation as far as, you know, sprayers and different ways to make it easier. But at the end of the day, it's still painting, and
yep.
It seems you've done a great job at Serta Pro, you know, getting the message out to probably an audience that's been used to seeing, you know, flyers and yard signs, letting them know the house is being painted by so-and-so. So to enter and thrive in this digital world, to me, is definitely my hats off to you and the organization to embrace that, where a lot of others have just said, no, we're a traditional type of business model, and we're just going to stay that. And I think maybe that's why you're starting to leave some of the pack behind you.
Yeah, and part of it has to do with wanting to build a brand. We don't just see ourselves painting houses. We see ourselves improving the lot of home improvement services in general. We think we're upping the game for everybody, both in our industry, which is painting, and in home services in general. And when you're a brand, you've got a target on your back. You have to live up to those expectations that you've set in your promise. So it's natural that we would expand into those markets, and we are desirous of growth. And if you're going to grow, you have to evolve and experiment, and you know, do what currently businesses do to grow, and that is advertise and engage in all these different methods and levels of technology. So that's from the beginning we've been on the internet probably since '96 in some way, shape, or form. And just speaking of franchising, in the early days, it was all about recruiting. It was that big investment in buying a franchise is, I think, what really drove franchising online. And that was very early adopted as the standard in finding franchisees was online. That was certainly by the turn of the century, 2000, 2001, that was the only way to find franchisors. It was a while before customers, at least in our space, became more internet savvy, and we've seen that grow. So that's just part of, you know, wanting to build a brand and building one is needing to be there.
So what type of technology do you use at Serta Pro Painters with respect to marketing?
Well, aside from, you know, analyzing data, we certainly have a website. We use the standard tools for social media and monitor, you know, manage our name and monitor it. I think we use a program, social mention, I think, is something we subscribe to keep an eye on that side of the business. Obviously you take your analytics in-house and you analyze them in different programs, everything's sort of stored in-house and various forms of SQL. We use email, of course, religiously, because that's how you get customers to take surveys and come back and leave comments, and that's still a big one for us. We are trying to get a consumer to make a decision when they're in front of my restaurant to pick the one across the street or mine. So we don't need to reach people necessarily at the point of decision. Certainly there's a mobile element because we're keeping in mind four-screen technology as we advertise on TV.
Sure.
We know they're looking at us on their tablet, and they're probably texting their friends saying, have you heard of these guys? So to the extent that we're leveraging internet or leveraging technology, that'd be the vast majority of it, aside from the fact that, you know, internal systems for the franchise operators themselves provide a lot of fingertip analysis of their current, you know, the current program state with different elements of the marketing program, and helps them make decisions as well. So,
you mentioned about, you know, surveys and what have you. How important is it to CertaPro painters, and in your opinion, how important is it with respect to customer review sites dealing directly in a business-to-consumer type of proposition?
Well, that's one thing that technology has done for the world is they've made everybody their own publisher. And with the Internet, anybody and everybody can go and say anything they want about you anytime, almost anywhere. So very early on, we've always been survey-driven. We sort of followed the enterprise rent-a-car model back in the 90s and made sure we surveyed our customers and they were done and checked their satisfaction and kept things in balance. But through the Internet, we learned early on to do what we can to encourage people to leave reviews on other sites and on our own site. And online relationship management is vital. You've got to keep tabs on what people are saying, and you have to learn to channel it. One thing we did, and a lot of good companies are doing this as well, is if in the absence of people putting up reviews about you, put your own reviews up. So we learned to take our reviews and make them a tool to provide just a gross tonnage of information on the web about us so people can make an informed decision. So we've used that as a tool to gain eyeballs on the Internet. And that's what people want anyway. They do want to read reviews. We post them all through our Facebook channel, the ratings, the good and the bad. And our franchisees post their reviews on their pages, and we put a select number on our national site, as we just have too many. People would just go crazy trying to read them. So there's a process to go from having everything unvarnished and a scrolling dialogue to having the ones that are appropriate regionally on different sites. So,
a big part of consumer marketing in many areas is educating the consumer, whether it be about the process, whether it be about the new features in a certain product. How do you utilize, you know, technology in today's marketing while educating the customer? Is there anything specific that you do, even if it's, you know, philosophy behind it?
We educate them the old-fashioned way. We use email.
Okay.
I know it sounds funny, but, we stay in touch with our consumers electronically. What that allows us to do is to publish content quickly. We can do it full audio, video streaming. We can invite them to look at videos or infographics or topics of interest to them with motion and sound. So you can't do that in the mail. You can't do it over the phone. So that's what if we have a philosophy, it's keeping them engaged through, you know, email and to relevant content that they want to view. And again, that you're talking back to the top of the show, you put out content, you read the data, you make decisions on the next round of content.
That's right. So, it's funny how you refer to good old-fashioned email marketing we both remember when we didn't have email marketing, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, old-fashioned email marketing. But, you know, people want to sit down at their PCs and play with stuff and look at things. They've told us the kind of things they want to see. We know how long a segment they want to look at, and we can gauge whether we're on track or off track by how long they're on site, how many times they respond and open, how many times they come back, that kind of thing. Some people say it's creepy or it's, you know, maybe it's spying or they think I don't like being tracked. Well, no, we do that, and a lot of marketers do it, I think, because they are trying to deliver something of value to you and educate you at the same time. And we can't we're wasting your time and our time if we don't try to make an effort to see or understand what you really want to see and really want to do.
Sure,
so
absolutely.
So that's part of the value proposition.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've seen some of the email marketing pieces, and they're very professionally done, and they have links to different aspects of the social media platforms. So it really does create that cross-platform multi-tiered effect, even though the primary drive is the email marketing, getting the content and the messaging out to the target audience. So you mentioned videos. How do you utilize of videos within a CertiProfile marketing perspective?
Well, certainly, in our business in particular, and I don't think it'd be any different if it was a restaurant. I think, as a consumer, I want to see who's coming to my house. So you will certainly find virtually all of our franchisees in some form of video speaking to consumers so they can get a sense of what they look like and, you know, sound like, so they don't have a stranger coming to the door. If I was a restaurant, I was proud of my restaurant, I would absolutely have a video of my kitchen, and I'd have a video of my staff, and I'd say, this is my place of business, this is what I do. So we use video in that regard as a warm introduction to make people feel confident in who they're going to be dealing with and what they're going to be dealing with and give an expectation. We also do it to convey the type of work we do and the type of people that we employ. We have a number of sort of advanced or additional length videos of franchisees will feature their, you know, the painters sometimes on the job site. And a lot of times we have a lot of videos with skilled labor, the color consultants and designers walking through with homeowners how to go about approaching a house. Again, it's education, it's about marketing, it's about telling people, hey, you know, these things are important to us, it's personal to us, it's personal to you, this is what it's going to look like. No surprises when we get to the door. So that's how we can use video.
Yeah, what a great way to convey video. And as you were saying, even if you had a restaurant, and it made me think, you know, you see so many of these videos online of a restaurant. And, of course, it's the beautiful picture of the front and the front door opening and going in and seeing tables and the wine area and the bar area and plates of food. But what a great idea to open up your restaurant video with a short run through the kitchen. See how clean it is, and even, you know, some shots when it's in full bloom operation on a Friday night, and seeing how it works. What a great, great idea. So hopefully some restaurant owners are taking note of that, because I think that would be, boy, that would send such a loud, resonating message to the consumer that you're willing to show the back of the house first. And I could just think of all the taglines to go along with it. That's a great, great, great thought, and love to build upon that. So, you know, obviously, if we have a seven-figure budget and somebody is willing to sign all those checks, you know, we could do a little bit of everything, and I think that's probably the biggest thing. I know I met with Steve Greenbaum of Postnet at the Fran Camp, and we were talking about all the technology, and I said, you know, what do you think? And he said, you know, basically you have to really get your arms around it, but pick, you know, one, two, or three things that you have to focus on and do it as good as you possibly can. And then, you know, if you want to add another one, add it on at that time. And, of course, it could be overwhelming, and it certainly be overwhelming and say, well, I got to be here. I got to be in this. I got to be in that. Wait, I can't forget that. I can't forget that. And you can't be everything to everybody. So with that in mind, you know, how do you suggest, what are your recommendations to a young franchisor to be able to, you know, establish a budget and then, of course, you know, force themselves to live within that budget?
As a franchisor?
As a franchisor down to the franchisee?
Every industry and every segment has sort of their niche corner of the world to market in, say, online. Whether you're in food service and it's Yelp, or you are in hotel management and it's on travel sites, or in our case, there's a very short handful of internet providers that will do the reviews for us, right? They'll review the customers. They generate the leads. They do the marketing for us. So I think in your industry, it's picking that which is the most relevant and starting there. So, you know, maybe you're a restaurant, you put a lot into Yelp, and you focus on those consumers first. And as you get better, then maybe that leads to banner advertising, or it leads to paid search, or it leads to more four-wall marketing or something off the street. I think in any event, you got to do, I think, two things at once. One is, as you build your business and you accumulate data, you have to capture that source. So if you're serving customers, gather the data at source, find out who they are, where they're coming from, whether that's asking for their zip code at the cash register, tracking the coupons, you know, more effectively by where you distributed them. There's various ways to gather customer data very surreptitiously at the cash register at a very small business, or through making sure you get name, address, and email for, you know, bigger purchase, bigger ticket items. So you need a combination of data and start in sort of your niche. But don't rule out the data. You can never have enough of it. You need that customer information from the first dollar bill you get through to the day you sell it on the stock market for $1 billion. So
absolutely. You know,
invest in data collection.
Yeah, there you go. One of my, I believe, one of the biggest travesties that has occurred with respect to customer loyalty occurred over the last 20 years with car dealerships, where, you know, our grandparents and our great-grandparents that were fortunate to buy cars, I know they used to refer to them as, you know, like the Chevy store, or, you know, they wouldn't, if they bought a Cadillac, they wouldn't dare take it anyplace else to fix with the Cadillac dealership. But obviously there's been this big disconnect, and I think part of that is because these dealerships are siloed out. You know, the new car department has their goals and objectives, and they're not in line with the used car department. And the used car department certainly is not in line with parts and service. And I've seen, having spent years in the automotive aftermarket business, I saw how this worked. You know, a customer buys a car, a new car, they trade it in. It's got, let's say, a transmission problem. And you would think at this point that the used car department then would take it over to their service department, who would buy the parts from the parts department, and ultimately, you know, repair the car. And instead what they do, the used car department on the side goes out and finds some wholesale repair shop to patch this up and not spend a lot of money on it because it affects their bottom line. And it just goes on and on and on. And, of course, you know, trying to get a car repaired at the dealership sometimes, you know, took hours or days when it should have been, you know, a lot quicker. And just seemed like they did so many different things to really kick off customers and certainly get them away from loyalty. And I think as you look through all this, it really shows how all these different components of an organization need to work together, and it can't be siloed out. So my direct question to you is, you know, how do you, in your capacity at CertaPros, you know, work with your counterparts in operations and training to ensure that the customer is provided with a great experience, or as I like to say, with a positively memorable customer experience?
Well, number one for us within our organization is we meet together as a team, as an organization, every week on the phone. We're very distributed. And every week we share the vision of the company, and I think everyone could iterate that, and that is our vision is to consistently deliver extraordinary experiences. And that's sort of top of mind with everybody across all teams. And so all teams meet, the whole company meets, and there's a lot of cross-functional teams. And I think it's essential the people at the top, the executive leadership, has to ensure that the operations teams, the marketing teams, whether it's legal and finance, meet at regular times and hash out their issues and work together on you know, executing program and executing things that needed to take place. So, yeah, that's not quite marketing. It's more cross-functional. But we work together across that. We share a common vision, and that common vision is shared on a regular basis. And I think if you scratched anyone in our organization, they know what our vision is, and they would be striving to do that in everything they do every day. And the car dealers, you know, the internet probably hurt them a lot. It took away all their voodoo pricing. And when you were talking about them getting the used car fixed, they don't even do that anymore. They take the car to the auction, and at the same auction, they're dumping that one, they're picking up another one.
Yep.
And they don't even sell cars anymore. They auction used cars.
Right.
It's a whole crazy business, and how, whether or not they take in, you know, I can't speak for how they are franchises themselves as well. Most car dealers, I know a number of them, they are a franchise system, oddly enough, but at a different scale than we're we operate at. And I think what they did for us is they showed us the need and value of taking our customer feedback seriously. Car dealers were, I think, the original ones to sort of get into that rating system with J.D. Power and make sure customers are satisfied, but they turned it into a game. When's the last time you bought a car where the guy didn't beg you to give him a 10 or a 5 when they call?
That's right. Well, Ed, we've actually run out of time. Fortunately, the on-demand version will pick up our last few minutes of comments. But I really do appreciate you taking the time out of a very busy schedule to be my guest today on Franchise Today, and I look forward to seeing you at the Franchise Update Franchise Consumer Marketing Conference in Buckhead on the 25th and 26th, okay? Thanks, Ed. I really appreciate it.
All right. I hope I helped you out. See you later.
Have a great day. That's it today for Franchise Today. We'll be on next week talking about franchise operations and support and franchise relations. Until then, my name is Paul Segretta, wishing you the best, the very best in this great thing we call franchising. And Franchise Today is...